A Katra podcast conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. We're here to, you know, cut through the noise and get straight to those really foundational ideas that shape how things work. And today we're tackling a big one. A really critical deep dive into organizational longevity with Jim Collins and Jerry Porras' hugely influential book, Built to Last, Successful Habits of Visionary Companies.
Yeah, it's such a crucial topic. I mean, you look around every board meeting, every news cycle, it feels like it's obsessed with the short term.
Absolutely. The next quarter, the next product.
Exactly. And Collins and Porras, they deliberately zoomed way out. So our mission today is really to look at, well, organizational immortality, if you like. I want to understand that kind of foundational DNA that lets a company not just succeed for maybe a few years, but to really endure and outperform the market for 50 years, 100 years, regardless of who's actually running the show at any given time.
I think that's the key relevance, isn't it? We as a culture, we seem sort of addicted to this idea of the individual genius, you know, the single charismatic hero who makes everything happen. But the beauty of Built to Last is how it systematically shows that those heroes, well, they're temporary factors at best. It really forces you to look past the personality and instead focus on the institutional architecture, the thing that truly lasts.
It's a real shift in focus, isn't it? From the brilliant idea to the brilliant institution. We're looking beyond like perfect market timing or some flash of product genius. We're examining the structure, the deep-seated culture, the actual organizational mechanisms inside companies like HP or Disney or Johnson & Johnson. How do they build capabilities that were just so robust, so strong they could transcend, you know, every leadership change, every market upheaval?
Okay, so let's unpack the authors then, because their method is really key to why this book carries so much weight. It wasn't just opinion, was it? It was based on this really rigorous comparison.
Absolutely. And the partnership itself is fascinating. You've got Jerry Porras, professor emeritus at Stanford Graduate School of Business. He brought decades of academic rigor, that deep expertise in organizational behavior.
Right. The academic grounding.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He made sure the study was, you know, methodologically sound, really solid.
And then you have Jim Collins. He was Porras' student, later his collaborator. And Collins just excels at synthesizing that massive amount of data. It was a six-year study, remember, into these really concise, memorable concepts, the ones we still use today, like BAGs and clock building.
Yeah, exactly. And what gives the book its distinctive authority, its real weight, is that they didn't just study 18 sort of iconic visionary companies. I think 3M, Marriott, companies founded before 1950. The crucial part is they paired each one with a carefully selected comparison company.
Ah, right. From the same industry.
Same industry, founded around the same time, but companies that had, well, much more limited success over the long haul.
And that comparative method, that's so powerful because it helps isolate the variables, doesn't it?
Totally.
If you have, say, Hewlett-Packard and Texas Instruments starting in a similar space, what fundamental structural differences allowed HP to become truly visionary while TI didn't quite reach that same sustained level? It lets them move beyond just, you know, the prevailing business myths and really pinpoint the actual drivers of long-term success.
That's the whole foundation. And that data, that comparison, led them straight to the book's really groundbreaking argument. The most enduring companies are not built around individual charismatic leaders. They're not built around brilliant initial products or perfect market timing. They're built around visionary organizational architectures.
Okay, and this is where we hit that core concept, right? The idea that really defines the whole book. Visionary companies are clock builders, not time tellers.
Right, the time teller, that's easy to picture.
Yeah.
It's the charismatic CEO, the singular genius who, you know, while they're there, they can instantly give you the right answer.
Makes the perfect deal.
Launches the killer product, exactly. They're indispensable, but only in the moment.
And the clock builder.
Ah, the clock builder. That's the leader who focuses their energy differently. They're creating the system, the culture, the actual internal mechanisms down, the clock itself. That clock can keep ticking, generating success, adapting, making great decisions again and again, long after the founder or that specific leader is gone. The organization itself becomes the ultimate creation.
That's a total paradigm shift, really.
It is, because if you're a time teller, when you leave, well, the company's success often leads with you, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a clock builder, you've created these institutional capabilities that just transcend any single person. And the data backs this up. Visionary companies, they promote from within far more often. They seem to actively reduce their dependence on needing some outside hero to come in and save the day.
But practically speaking, building a clock, that sounds incredibly difficult. How do you create something that's, on the one hand, stable enough to keep its identity for maybe a century, and yet flexible enough to adapt to technologies we haven't even dreamed of yet?
That challenge, that tension, it brings us right into the core frameworks of the book. They found that visionary companies master paradox.
Yeah.
Collins and Porras call it the genius of the A&D.
The genius of the A&D. I like that phrasing. Because most of us, right, and most of those comparison companies, we fall into what they call the tyranny of the OR.
Yes.
We think we have to choose. Is it stability or change? Purpose or profit? Continuity or adaptation?
But the visionary companies just reject that binary choice. They insist on having both, purpose and profit, fanatical commitment to the core and radical adaptability. And this mastery, this ability to hold both sides, it's really underpinned by their core ideology.
Core ideology. Okay, that's chapter four. And it's so much more than just some, you know, fluffy mission statement hanging on the wall.
Definitely not.
They argue it's the real driving force. It defines the organization's soul, essentially. And it's made up of two key pieces.
That's right. First, you have the core values. These are the timeless, absolutely non-negotiable principles. Think of HP's respect for the individual, or the Johnson & Johnson credo.
Things that don't change with market trends.
Exactly. They're bedrock. And second, there's the purpose. This is the fundamental reason for being, beyond just making money.
And this is where that famous oxygen metaphor comes in, isn't it?
Yes. Profit, they argue, it's like oxygen. You absolutely need it to live. It's essential fuel.
Yeah.
No question.
Right.
But breathing oxygen isn't the point of life, is it?
Right. It enables life, but it's not the purpose itself.
Precisely. The point is the core purpose. And here's a really counterintuitive finding. These organizations, driven by meaning, like Merck, for instance, giving away the cure for river blindness globally because of their commitment to preserve and improve human life, those companies actually achieve superior long-term financial performance. Their purpose acted as a better strategic filter, a better guide than just chasing profits ever could.
Wow. So that stability, that fixed anchor of the core ideology, actually allows them to take huge risks elsewhere.
That's the practical application of the genius of the A&D. It's what they call preserve the core, stimulate progress.
Preserve the core, stimulate progress.
Okay. You have to fanatically, almost religiously, preserve your core ideology. But everything else, your strategies, your product lines, your processes, even your structure, must be intensely stimulated for change. The security of knowing who you are gives you the confidence to explore aggressively what you might become.
Okay, so the core is the anchor. And the engine for stimulating all that intense progress, that change, is the BHAG, the big, hairy, audacious goal.
The BHAG, yes. It's the key organizational mechanism for driving change forward. It's not just some incremental annual target. It's a clear, compelling, usually 10 to 30 year target that just unifies and energizes the entire organization. It's like the Mount Everest the company commits to climbing together.
Okay, I have to jump in here though. In today's market, things are so volatile. Technology shifts seem to happen every few years. Is a 10 to 30 year goal, is that still realistic? Doesn't it risk becoming totally irrelevant?
That's a really fair challenge. But I think the power of the BHAG isn't necessarily its prediction accuracy over 30 years. It's more about its ability to align energy right now. Think about Boeing back in the 60s, deciding to bet the entire company on building the 747.
Huge risk.
Massive. The goal was enormous, compelling, and frankly, probably a bit terrifying for them. It demanded extraordinary effort, incredible organizational focus for a whole decade. The specific strategy to get there might shift along the way, sure, but that mountain peak remains fixed. It inspires the climb.
Okay, so the goal provides that relentless momentum. And then to protect that momentum, to make sure everyone is really pulling together towards that BHAG, these companies develop something Collins and Porras call cult-like cultures.
Yeah, that phrase definitely catches your attention. It can sound a bit intimidating.
It does.
But what they mean isn't a cult in the dangerous sense. They mean a fiercely ideological organization. These companies have extremely strong cultures that demand real alignment with the core values. And these cultures act as very effective screening mechanisms.
So it's not about being some kind of perfect, happy place for absolutely everyone.
Not at all. It's more about being an incredibly inspiring place for the people who do fit the core ideology perfectly. And maybe, sometimes, an uncomfortable place for those who don't quite align.
Right, which drives that fierce loyalty and incredible cohesion among the right people. You mentioned Nordstrom earlier, that obsessive focus on customer service. It screens for very specific behaviors and values.
Exactly. And this deep commitment to the core, it doesn't mean they rely on some kind of revolutionary master plan. The authors actually found that success often comes more from evolutionary progress,
Evolutionary progress, meaning.
meaning systematic experimentation rather than flawless foresight. The kind of underlying mantra is try a lot of stuff and keep what works.
That feels so counterintuitive. We always want the magic bullet plan, the perfect strategy laid out.
I know, but they describe it more as organized opportunism. Visionary companies actually seem to make more mistakes than their comparison companies.
Really?
Yeah, but they're far superior at quickly recognizing and then building upon the small, unexpected successes. And just as importantly, quickly abandoning the failures. The classic example here is 3M's institutional mechanism, that famous 15% time policy, allowing employees time for personal projects.
Right, which led to the post-it note.
Exactly. That mechanism wasn't specifically built to invent the post-it note, but it created the space for that kind of opportunistic evolutionary progress to happen.
And then to make sure that cultural strength and those mechanisms like 15% time actually survive over generations, homegrown management becomes absolutely paramount.
Yes. Promoting insiders is crucial for preserving that core ideology from one generation of leaders to the next.
And the stats back this up.
Oh, clearly. The statistical evidence is overwhelming. Visionary companies are vastly more likely to promote CEOs and other senior leaders from within their own ranks. They invest heavily in developing those internal leaders precisely because those people are already deeply steeped in the company's soul. It helps guarantee that cultural continuity, even when specific strategies have to change dramatically.
Okay, so if we just step back for a moment from all the details, what are the absolute key unavoidable themes we really need to take away from this blueprint for longevity?
Well, theme one, I'd say, is institution building over individual leadership. Full stop. If you want to build something truly lasting, you have to stop looking for the singular hero. Start investing in the system, the architecture, the cultural mechanisms that will keep operating effectively, independent of any single person.
Okay, and theme two, that surprising finding. Purpose drives long-term profit.
Yes. This is the great counterintuitive insight. Focusing on meaning, on that core ideology, it's not some soft, secondary, nice-to-have in business. It's actually a driver of superior long-term financial results because it forces better, more principled, strategic decisions over time.
Got it. And theme three.
The genius of the A&D. You have to master that paradox of stability and change. The strength of your unchanging core is actually what enables radical flexibility and adaptation everywhere else.
Because if your core is weak, you'll just be afraid of change all the time.
Exactly. You'll cling to the status quo.
And finally, that relentless internal drive. Focus on self-improvement mechanisms.
Right. Visionary companies build systems that ensure they're never truly comfortable. They institutionalize the idea that good enough never is. It drives continuous improvement from within, regardless of what competitors are doing or what the external pressure is.
It's amazing how the book gave us language that really sticks, isn't it? Let's maybe revisit a couple of those really powerful phrases.
Definitely. That core distinction between the creator and maybe the commentator.
You mean, having a great idea or being a charismatic visionary leader is time-telling. Building a company that can prosper far beyond the presence of any single leader is clock-building.
That's the one. It basically sums up the entire thesis in one sentence.
Yeah, it really does. And the one on motivation, the oxygen metaphor, that just resets how you think about profit.
It does. Profit is like oxygen, absolutely necessary for life, but it's not the point of life itself. Confuse the two, and you ultimately fail.
And that commitment to paradox again. A visionary company doesn't simply balance between preserving a tightly held core ideology and stimulating vigorous change. It does both to an extreme.
Right. They don't look for some safe middle ground. They push for extremes on both ends. Extreme preservation of the core, extreme stimulus for progress.
Okay, this is clearly a book packed with foundational ideas. How can someone listening start applying these concepts maybe tomorrow? What are some practical takeaways?
Well, one simple starting point, regardless of your position, is to audit your own role. Ask yourself, am I behaving more like a time teller or a clock builder? Are you documenting the processes you know? Are you meticulously training your subordinates? Are you focusing on building systems so your team could function effectively, even if you were unexpectedly gone for a month? That's clock building on any scale.
That's a great practical step. And if you're involved in hiring at all,
use your articulated core values as an intense, genuinely non-negotiable filter. Don't just pay lip service to it. Hire for deep cultural alignment first and foremost. That cult-like approach, that focus on fit, ensures that everyone you bring in is actually reinforcing the essential core, not diluting it.
Right. And strategically, move beyond just those safe, predictable, incremental goals.
Yes. Set a real BHAG for your team or your organization. That 10 to 30 year goal that's compelling, maybe even slightly terrifying. That single, audacious goal, whether you ultimately achieve it exactly as planned or not, will unify focus and inspire that kind of extraordinary, concentrated effort like nothing else.
For me, what really struck me, what was most surprising maybe, was that finding that so many of these visionary companies, they didn't actually start with some revolutionary product idea or a lightning strike of market insight. Many started simply with a clear set of values and this profound intention to build a great organization first. The organization itself was the ultimate creation, the founding genius.
That completely shifts the priority, doesn't it? It implies that institutional discipline, that cultural intention, is actually more valuable in the long run than a fleeting market advantage.
Yeah. Enduring greatness seems to require that institutional thinking, a really long-term patient commitment to building an organization that has both an unshakable soul, the core ideology, and that relentless systematic drive for progress.
And maybe that leads to a final thought for you, the listener, to sort of mull over in your own world. If you look at your own sphere of influence, maybe your team, your company, perhaps even your family structure, what aspects are the truly non-negotiable core that you feel must be preserved no matter what? And conversely, what aspects represent progress that need to be constantly, even aggressively, stimulated for change and improvement? Finding that balance, or rather mastering that AND, seems key.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.